Fast Model Sports is the world's most versatile basketball coaching software to help power your preparation. Fast Model has developed the industry's best coaching software, including the number one play diagramming and playbook software, FastDraw. FastDraw bridges the gap between whiteboarding and the digital world with an incredibly easy-to-use interface that can be used on both your computer and your iPad, providing maximum portability for your own personal play and drill database. It doesn't stop there. Along with FastDraw, they have other great programs such as FastScout, which I have used, which helps coaches create clean professional scouting reports customized for your team. FastModel is trusted and used by every NBA team and WNBA team and 85% of Division I college teams and over 8,000 high school and youth teams from over 75 countries around the world. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching resources through their blog and playbank, which features over 5,000 free plays and drills for their online coaching community. For access to these plays and more information, visit FastModelSports.com or follow them on Twitter at FastModel. Hey, welcome to another Coaching You podcast with the coach, Brendan Sir. So excited today. We're back in women's basketball, and Karen Ashton, the head coach of the University of Texas Longhorns, is our guest. Unbelievable success with UT, just as been in her seventh year now, returning there after a long stint as an assistant and associate head coach. She has come back, five straight NCAA tournament appearances, four consecutive Sweet 16s. She has the Longhorns rolling, and I think you're really going to enjoy. She's got some great insights on how to be a successful coach and everything that she has learned in the process. I think you're really going to enjoy it. So after this timeout, we're going to hook 'em horns with Karen Ashton, University of Texas. I wanted to announce a new partnership between Coaching U and InnerZone Sports. You know, for a long time, one of the intangibles by coaches and athletes is team chemistry. And it's a major factor all the time in whether a team has success or failure. When the folks from InnerZone came to me at Coaching U and said, we can even help your team, I was all ears. And what we did is we took a quick assessment, 2 to 4 minutes each person, and we were stunned by what we found out about ourselves and our team. You owe it to yourself to find out what InnerZone can do for your team. It's the simplest and fastest and most accurate software available to measure team chemistry. I highly recommend, without any reservation, the use of InnerZone with your team, whether you're a middle school, high school, college, or professional team, to help take you to the next level. For further information, go to coachingulive.com/InnerZone. That's InnerZone. Let's take a second to tell you about one of our partners, Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish basketball shooting machines are the most high-tech and durable basketball shooting machines on the market. Each shooting machine was designed specifically for high-repetition training to allow players to improve through technology. Dr. Dish offers game-like training to give hundreds of shooting reps in just minutes and provide powerful analytics to help players improve their game. Dr. Dish has also introduced Skill Builder, which is the first of its kind in the basketball shooting machine industry that enables players and coaches to stay connected, design and upload training exercises, and instantly receive feedback on their workout, allowing for real-time adjustments and improved performance. It is, without question, the most innovative basketball training machine on the market. To learn more about Dr. Dish, log on to drdishbasketball.com or follow them on Twitter at drdishbball. Don't forget to mention Coaching U and receive $300 off on your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's right, mention Coaching U or the podcast and get $300 off your Dr. Dish. Hey, welcome back to our podcast. This is the coach, Brendan Sir. So excited today. Karen Ashton, the head coach of the University of Texas, is with us. And Karen, thanks for doing this.
Oh, you're more than welcome. This is a privilege and an honor to be on your podcast.
Well, you know, I would like to have had the success that you have had, you know, in the 6 years since you came back to UT, but as a head coach. When you came from North Texas after your little stint at Charlotte as the head coach, where you went out after your previous, all that time you've spent at UT as an assistant, all of a sudden now you went out and you became a head coach. You got that unbelievable experience. Now you came back. What was it like to first take over?
I think the best word I can use is humbling. Yeah. You know, it was an overwhelming, humbling feeling, just to have been here as an associate head coach and assistant and understand the magnitude of the program and understand the tradition, and just, you know, to be able to come back and really what I felt more than anything was gratitude, and I was humbled, but I also felt really responsible. I mean, you know, I understood what the expectations were, and I felt a responsibility to try to get us back on track.
You know, you worked with and for Jody Conrad, one of the great coaches ever in the women's game. She's a legend, you know, 700 and freaking 80 something wins. I mean, just incredible. What was it like? I know when you said humbling, but what was she like as a coach?
You know, she was a lot different than I think what people probably thought she was. She has an incredible sense of humor. And I think what was so interesting, you know, again, I think if I have any advice for any type of young coach that's really anxious to get out and get their feet wet as a head coach, it would be, you know, to slow down and sort of, you know, smell the daisies, and really understand when you have somebody with some experience that you're working for to try to take it all in. And, you know, she was wise. She is wise. And the things that I learned from her, to be honest with you, I didn't realize in the moment. When you really realize what you've learned from someone is when you leave them. And when I took the head job at Charlotte, that's when I began to understand, you know, really how good of a manager she was. I think she, you know, it speaks for itself as far as her coaching ability, but I think what I learned from her more than anything was, you know, how to manage the day-to-day process of running a program. You know, I was able to be here long enough to process what she did, you know, as far as how she handled our kids academically. You know, the expectations at Texas are a little different than some places in the classroom. So I think it was a good experience for me to have been here and to understand the dynamic of what it's like to be a student athlete here.
Staying with Jody for a second, what was she as a coach, as an actual basketball coach, what were her real strengths?
Well, she was an incredible defensive coach. You know, I mean, I think that she really understood and really was ahead of her time as far as, you know, the run and jump defense that she's kind of famous for. And then just getting kids to play really, really hard on the defensive end and be controlling, so to say, tempo of the game and how the game ebbs and flows just on the defensive end. And then I think she was really, in my eyes, as I look back on it, just a master at kind of pushing buttons, you know. And I think I didn't understand that in the moment. I thought, you know, why is this kid, you know, doing this, and why is she handling this kid this way? And as I got older, I really understood that was a gift on her part, as far as really understanding this is the button I've got to push with this kid, but it's not the same one for this one.
You know,
and you know, the players really cared about her. They wanted to play for her.
That's so huge. You know, and one of the things that I think, whenever I do clinics or speak to coaches and I tell them, one of the keys in coaching that I learned from Chuck Daly was that you have to coach every player differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and
coaches, you know, I didn't understand that when I was young.
Yeah, they say, no, you got to treat them all the same. Yeah, you got to treat them all the same. No.
Yeah, you can't. You definitely can't. They're not from the same backgrounds. They don't react the same way to everything. And you really have to try to figure out along the way. And sometimes it takes 2 or 3 years, you know, and you think you know them in the recruiting process. And then they get here and they might not be exactly who you thought they were. And so then you have to try to figure out what is it that motivates this young person and how can I handle them? And in the framework of what, you know, obviously the team aspect.
You know, when you took the job at Charlotte, which is for those that don't know, University of North Carolina, Charlotte, now called just Charlotte, but, you know, a terrific place, great city. But most importantly, what were the things that you learned, had to learn as an assistant coach, a successful assistant coach? I felt all along in my 40 years of being one that, man, I know everything. I am ready. I could do this stuff, man, you know. And then all of a sudden when I became a head coach, it was like I had been hit with a dumb button, you know, all of a sudden moving over those 18 inches. What are the biggest things that you could pass on to other assistants that you learned or you need to know?
Ooh, we don't have enough time for that.
No, we go. You don't play till tonight. That's okay.
The whole podcast on that in particular. But I tell you what, I think that first of all, I would say to a young assistant or one in general is almost what you tell players, which is trust the process and go through the process. And that's probably what I would tell an assistant coach that benefited me the most of all. And I will say that it wasn't my choice, but it was my choice to listen, but it wasn't at the time. I remember being a very young assistant here at Texas and I got an opportunity to interview for a head job. Mm-hmm. And I was only 2 or 3 years into the job. And I walked into, you know, Jody's office and I remember saying, you know, I think I want to interview for this job. And she very pointedly said, you know, you're not ready and you need to go back in your office and get to work. And, you know, we'll talk when you are ready. And at the time, I mean, it hurt my feelings,
yes,
but
yeah,
I do understand what she meant by that. I mean, I was not ready to manage a program.
How about
and
that?
I think that's what happens to young people a lot and young assistants that think they're ready because maybe they can recruit or, you know, maybe they think they can coach or they do have a philosophy of coaching, which you should. I think what they don't realize is that there's so much more, you know, to the decision making that goes on. You know, it's every day you're managing not only players, but you're managing other people. And I think that's what probably caught me the most off guard. It wasn't necessarily the coaching because I had been coaching for a long time. I mean, I'd gone through the high school ranks. You know, I had some experience under my belt. I wasn't the prototype young assistant. Mm-hmm. So when I took a head job, I mean, I was ready. There was no question that I was ready to manage, but what I didn't understand was the management of all the people. And that's a little different than what I think people realize. You know, it's if you just got your, you know, your 12 or your 15 players or how many you have on your team, if it was just you and them, it might be a little easier than it is when you put in the dynamic of you have a strength coach, you have a trainer, you have assistants, you have operations. And all of those people have to be on the same page. So I think probably one of the best decisions you can make is getting advice on hiring a staff. I think it's almost as important as, you know, the coaching, the X's and O's and all of that. I mean, who are you surrounding yourself with? Because that's what makes you successful. I mean, it's not necessarily what you can do. It's what all of the people around you can do. And, you know, I mean, everybody talks about loyalty, and I think that is a huge factor because I think the kids have to feel that everyone is on the same page. But I also think that they have to stretch you. They have to have some understanding of the process too. So I think there's a lot that goes into it that I didn't realize until I took the job at Charlotte. And fortunately, I made a great decision in waiting until that job because it was a terrific head job for my first one. You know, they had expectations. Judy Rose is a phenomenal AD. She helped me grow. She wasn't afraid to tell me the hard things as a young head coach. And, you know, it was a place that really had expectations. So I didn't go somewhere where, you know, they didn't stretch me and want me to grow too and expect me to do well. You know, I had followed Amanda Butler, who we all know is a terrific head coach. I mean, Katie Meyer was there before Amanda. And so there were expectations at Charlotte that I was able to embrace, but, and there was support. And I think that's really, really important when you head into your first head job. Or, you know, what are you thinking? Are you just taking the first one that is available, or are you really looking at the people that you're surrounded with?
I think leadership is so important. You're right. Judy Rose, if I'm not mistaken, was a terrific AD that when she was there, you know, just really, she had a knack for hiring terrific coaches, didn't she?
She did. She did. And I, you know, I think she's one of those people that really, she cared about women's basketball. I mean, that was number one. She cared about women's basketball.
Isn't that great?
And I think that it mattered to her who was at the helm of that job.
I think that's so important. And we're seeing that now. And, you know, and I watched the different conferences, and I watched the SEC and the ACC and women's ball. And, you know, and I see the investment, frankly, that these schools are making, and the, now the results that come with it, because they hire terrific coaches, which I think is the most important part. I think the leadership that a head coach brings is so important. And then they know how to recruit, et cetera. And then their programs come up and they rise with it, and they become revenue producing sports at many of these schools. And then I think the Big 12 is really doing a good job, where Texas has always been good, Baylor's been good, and now we're starting to really get great investment in the other programs throughout the league, and I think it's really paying off. And now you have a tough league.
No question about that, you know, and I really, I mean, just because I was fortunate enough to have been in the Big 12, you know, years ago, it's, I think it's always been good in women's basketball.
Right.
I mean, I think the thing that has separated it really is the fans. It's a fan friendly league, and it's a fan appreciated league. You know, you talk about, I know that there's been some, you know, changes at Texas Tech, but you're talking about a traditional program that's always had great fans. Oklahoma's always great fans. Obviously Baylor and Texas do. And I think the other programs are, you know, you're right, they're on the rise also. But I think that's one thing that makes our league special, is that people follow women's basketball.
That is huge, huge. Talk about, if you would, your team this year at Texas. And they're doing terrific. You know, you people look at records and they say, wow, terrific record and this stuff. Talk about what your expectations were going into the year, how you handle injuries, which are always part of any sport, but how do you go about that?
Yeah, it's hard. I think you have to stay steady. You know, they're going to follow how you react to injuries and adversity. And I think it's really been important for our entire coaching staff and everybody surrounding our young people that we stay steady with what the process is. And if you handle it correctly and you handle it, then I don't think the kids have any problem. And, you know, as I look back on our summer workouts, when we were all existing and there weren't any injuries, it was a very exciting time. I mean, you saw the young kids come in. We had five freshmen come in that were about as ready. They were about as ready as I've ever had a freshman class, as far as physically and skill wise, mentally, all of that. They were really well prepared. And, you know, that's always an interesting thing for a freshman, is that, you know, even though they're, you know, they have high accolades and they think they're ready, they're never really ready. And, you know, that was very promising for our team, that our freshman class came in physically, you know, about as ready as you can be, until they get in the fires. And then we have the significant injury with Sedona Prince right out of the gates in August at the USA event in Mexico. And so that, you know, initially put a damper on where we were headed with our size. But again, you know, we had some depth in the post, and I didn't think that was as significant. You know, it was to me more about her, you know, being disappointed, and because she was really ready. She was definitely ready to contribute. And then we get into the first couple of games of the year, and LaShawn Higgs goes down, and then Joyner goes down. So you're talking about two returning starters that probably had the most experience on your team. So basically we went the entire first semester without you know, without those guys. But, you know, it's, we're in the not excuse making business. And I think that what's happened with our team is that we've just kind of had to invent ourselves a few times. And we're finally at a place where I think everybody is solid with their rotation. I think we can start to get what I would call kind of your feet on the ground as to what your role is, with Joyner starting to get back in the flow. And I think in particular, a player like Charlie Collier, who is very, very gifted. One of those that I would say you always think you're ready until you get here as a freshman and then you get in the fire, especially in the post. It's a fast game. It's a very physical game, and it's different than high school. And so I think it has taken her some time to get used to the speed of the game, but her feet are finally, I think, on the ground. And as she starts to contribute, our team will begin to get better and better offensively in the paint. So those two are starting to come around back to where they I thought they would be. So the reinvention is about to get finalized, so to say, knock on wood, as long as no one else gets hurt. But I feel good about where we're at. I think defensively we're not where I'm used to being. This is not the best defensive team I've ever coached, but they're starting to come around. And you know, we have to find some creative ways to make ourselves better defensively.
Yeah, I think
I'm actually pleased with where we are. We had a very disappointing loss to Kansas State last week, but I've said this many times since then, you know, you can't really disrespect where Kansas State is trying to go and you know, the way they performed in the game. So we just needed to reset, and we did that on Saturday against TCU.
Yeah, when you play in a really good league, you're going to have teams that people might consider upsets, but every team in a good league is good. I mean, for the most part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It would be very disrespectful to say we should never have a tough game, you know, I mean, other than maybe one or two. I mean, that's a little disrespectful to the rest of the coaches and the team. And they have two all-conference players on their team.
And,
you know, and so I think that I think they played to their capabilities against us, and we were not good getting out of the gates. But again, I think they had something to do with that.
And a lot of your young players might not realize it per se, but, you know, when you're playing against a team like Texas that's had five consecutive NCAA tournament appearances, four straight Sweet 16 appearances, you have a little bit of a target on your back. You're a big,
sure,
big game for every opponent,
right,
in the conference or not. You know, I watched your game with Tennessee, you know, early in the season on national TV, and I'm saying, this is great women's basketball game. I mean, they you know, they played really, really well. And, you know, but that, I mean, that's the way the sport's supposed to be played and stuff like that. And so I think that's one of the, that's what, you know, when, you know, I think that's one of the things that we want. But you have a program that's now going to really, you know, restore phenomenal prominence and nationally and stuff. How hard, what is the key to keeping it at that level? I'm not trying to sound like, you know, your AD now. I'm not trying to do that because I know he is just a spectacular guy.
He is. I tell you what, I have been overwhelmed by how he has energized our athletic program.
Yes.
Chris Del Conte is the real deal. And, you know, anything that he does expect of me is not any more than I expect of myself or that we expect of our program. We understand where we need to be. I think we're there. You know, we can talk about the injuries all we want to, but I still think our team is 15-3 and a pretty good basketball team that I do believe is still not peaking. And if we continue to stay the course, which has been a word and a phrase that I have used really all year long, ever since we, you know, we started the season, and I knew that we weren't necessarily at that moment where we needed to be. As long as our team continues to stay the course and works every day in practice and continues to improve, the best is yet to come for this season and for this team. And I think that kind of is the way you have to look at managing a program like Texas. I mean, you can't ever get to a point where you think, oh, well, I don't have to work today and I don't have to recruit today and I don't have to show up today. I mean, that's just part of being at Texas, is that you have to show up and, you know, roll your sleeves up and go to work and continue to strive to be the best. I mean, it doesn't ever change here.
When recruiting is the lifeline of college athletics. Talent is the price of admission for all sports at any level. But what is the secret? I didn't mean it to be a softball, but what is the secret for your success? You've been a tremendous recruiter. You have great recruiting classes. What is the secret, or what is your formula for recruiting?
I think that, first of all, I have to say that the University of Texas is an amazing place, and it's an easy sell because it is such an amazing university. And when you add the fact that the city of Austin mm-hmm. is so spectacular, when you add the academic reputation along with the city, along with the most amazing athletic department in the country, then it becomes a pretty good sell when you go in home.
Sure.
Aside from that, which I think is huge,
it's huge.
Past the fact that those things are pretty good sells, especially for young women. I mean, let's face it, most young women want a degree. And if you are a Texan and you grew up a Texan, which, again, all of our players aren't Texans, but, you know, you kind of have to start in the state of Texas if you're at the University of Texas. And girls basketball is, to me, at the highest level in the high school ranks in Texas. So that's where you begin with your recruiting. I mean, if you're a Texan, then everybody in your family knows the value of the degree at the University of Texas. And for young women, I think that still has to be in the forefront. I mean, they're not making enough money professionally for a degree not to matter. And I've said it all along. I mean, if you're going to get a degree in the state of Texas and really almost nationally, there's not a better public institution in the country. So that becomes part of a big sell for us. I mean, you want young women that want to get a degree. And then it kind of trickles down to what are the intangibles after that. And, you know, I think we do have great fans. That's an easy sell. I think our network is a huge sell. I mean, that's when you start to branch out to other places besides Texas, where, you know, it's amazing. I mean, our network is amazing. I mean, there's some people that say, you know, they ask me all the time, do you like the network? I mean, is it a positive or a negative? And I don't even know how you even have that conversation about it being a negative when your school has its own network.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run by ESPN, and the quality of the content is so spectacular. You know, so for example, we signed a young lady from New York this year that it makes it a lot easier for her to come here knowing that her parents are going to see every game she plays. So I think those are all the positives that make our recruiting jobs a little bit easier. But I will say that something I learned very, very as a very young coach that I still tell any young coach that I have a conversation with that asks me about recruiting and why have you had success your whole career, the really simple answer is work.
Yeah.
I don't think you can get around it. I think that if you're going head to head with whatever your competition is, then the work that you put into it to build the relationship with the people that surround that student athlete, their family, the kid in general, that sort of becomes the separator a lot of times. And to be honest with you, what I'm learning is that if it isn't the separator, I'm not sure that it's going to work anyway. So those are things. One thing I've learned along the way is that you can never stop learning.
Amen.
Sounds pretty simple, but if you ever get to a point where you're through learning about what's important in this business, then it's probably about time to hang it up.
You know, I was having a conversation with a coach last night, and the discussion got to this point, and I said, you know, Coach Wooden had a great, great line, and it's what you learn after you think you know it all that's going to mm-hmm. make you a better coach, parent, teacher, whatever in life. You know, because so many coaches, when I'll say something to, I say, you know, and I try to explain a play to them, a drill, a philosophy. No, we do it a different way. You know, be open to learning, be open to growing, right. Continuous learning. I know so much more about coaching that I don't even have a team now. I wish I had a team because I'd be such a better coach now than I was when I was winning world championships. And that's just the way I feel because my life now is listening to other people mm-hmm. and talking to them and probing. And boy, you know, what a different way to learn. I love the women's game. Let me tell you, I'm so embarrassed for the men's college game for this standpoint. And Shaka Smart has been a friend of mine since he was a baby. But Shaka, you know, but here's why I'm embarrassed. We're the only men's basketball, college basketball is the only league in the world that doesn't play four quarters.
Right.
The only league. They just embarrass me. And, you know, talk about how that, the influence that has had first on the women's game in the last few years.
I think it's funny that you say that because I had a speaking engagement yesterday back in Arkansas and I had that question asked of me and I have to say that I think it's been one of the most positive moves that we've made in the women's game. First of all, just again, the logic behind playing four quarters in high school and then not playing it and then playing it professionally doesn't make any sense. Right. So I think that first of all, the transition for the high school players and then in particular for the college players to go to the WNBA or, you sure. know, overseas to learn the dynamics of the four quarters and, you know, just the simple things of advancing the ball and all of that.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah.
And then I think just the fluidity of going from one level to the next has to be easier. I mean, I haven't in particularly asked any of the college players once they get to the pros the last couple of years, hey, you know, did you find that easier? But I have to think that it is.
Don't you feel, Karen, from a strategic, again, I watch a lot of women's games. I think now the way you approach each quarter strategically is different as opposed to just a 20-minute running half. The way you know, you're now saying, okay, now I got to go for the last shot of the quarter. Now right. I can maybe go 2-for-1 at the end of a quarter or however you want to approach it, you know.
It's so funny that you say that because we have a point guard that's sort of just taken over the reins this year. She was a backup to Brooke McCarty for the last couple of years. And uh-huh. Her name is Shook Sutton, and she is a tremendous point guard. But her management this year, as opposed to last year when she was in the game, you know, sometimes she would take over the point guard responsibilities in the second quarter. Brooke would come out, and what I didn't realize was, or towards the end of the first, what I didn't realize is that is a process for these young kids that come into college and learn, you know, because if they didn't learn it in high school, sometimes they learn it in high school, but sometimes they don't. So I think just the management for the mm-hmm. players in general, I mean, they get better and better as we've moved, you know, now we're into several years into the four quarters. You can see the difference in how they're learning to manage the game as opposed to when we first started it.
I think also we talked about advancing the ball. I was embarrassed the other day, and this is my thing where the purists that say in men's basketball, advancing the ball, oh, that's awful. That like you know, like we're going to do something that's going to tarnish our world, right? And, you know, but we watch an NBA game and, you know, each team is advancing the ball 3 times in the last 2 minutes of a game. Right. You know, and you see some of the best plays you've ever seen in basketball, some great strategic out-of-bounds mm-hmm. plays and great coaching. And I watched a Hall of Fame coach last Saturday, men's coach, and I watched him have 2.5 seconds and have to go full court.
Right.
And they threw the ball out of bounds. And this is a Hall of Fame coach, and he looked like a dumbass, frankly. But it wasn't his fault.
Same thing happened to our men last Monday on Big Monday.
Yes, exactly.
You know, we had the ball against Kansas at Kansas, and it would have been a completely different dynamic had they been able to advance the ball. I used that as an example yesterday. I said I was sitting there thinking during that game, it's too bad they can't advance.
Yes.
And it has made it more interesting. And
for the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And all you have to do is look at our last two Final Fours
Yes.
and look at the dynamic plays that really, I mean, if you can argue that the women's Final Fours the last 2 years have been way more interesting than the men's.
Way better
So
in the men's
I think
game.
it makes it more entertaining
Yeah.
for the fans. I think that, just to get into the logistics of even like marketing, in particular for women's basketball, there's more opportunities to do some fan-friendly events and in between the quarters, and just, I mean, that's beyond, X's and O's and all of that, but it's part of the game. It's part of fan entertainment. And right now we're in an entertainment business where, you're competing,
It's just,
for fans.
yeah, it's the old saying. I think the men's college game, and trust me, I was my last stint was at LSU, so I'm not that I'm anti-college coaching. It's about basketball. It's not is that the game is not for me, the coach. The men's college game, it's about the coach, in my opinion. The game's supposed to be about the kids,
Right.
and so like. We couldn't get the men to go from 35 seconds to 30 seconds. You would have thought we were asking them to give us one of their kids, for crying out loud. We're the only leagues in the world that don't play with a 24 second clock. When you recruit overseas, they're all using 24 second clock. And boy, and you say, well, women could never play. No, the women play with 24 second clock. The high school kids play with a 24 second clock. And as Jay Billis said to me once, what I thought was the best thing. He says it teaches players to make quick decisions. And that's what basketball is about. Good decisions,
Right.
quick decisions,
Right.
and make them think and stuff like that. And trust me, I mean, as I say, when I go to China, if I go to anywhere in the Middle East, I go to Africa, go to Australia, they're all playing with that. And it's wonderful, so maybe the men will come around. I don't know. They're a little slow, Darren. I don't know about
I'm
these
not
men.
going to comment on
I don't know about these guys, but hey,
that.
if you could, Bob Starkey, my dear friend, women's associate head coach at Texas A&M, he has a great saying. He says, "Coaching is coaching. Men, women, it doesn't matter." Becky Hammon, dear friend from the San Antonio Spurs, she's a, do you think we're going to see? I know our men have invaded the women's college game and in the WNBA, and that's fine. Okay, but oh, do you think we're going to see women coaching the men's side of college or NBA?
I would probably say that if I had to guess what will happen first, it would be the NBA.
I think so too.
I think that that barrier could get shattered before the college game. I don't know. I do think that we will get to a place where women are being considered as coaches in the men's game, in the college game. I think that will be a step that will be taken at some point. And when you think about it, I don't know why it hasn't.
Do you mean as an assistant or associate head coach?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that
I
is
would have one on
probably,
my staff in a heartbeat. Yeah,
it
because
won't surprise me at all if that does not start happening. I mean, for multiple reasons. I mean, players have, kids have changed,
hey, men,
and
yeah.
having, I mean, there's a reason why we have diversity on our staff
Exactly.
as women's basketball coaches. It is a positive. Just as we said, we coach kids differently. They react to people differently, and they've had different circles of influence. And I would say the same thing about men. So I'm not sure why that barrier hasn't been broken, but I think it will be. And then I think that because it already has been done in the NBA, the inevitable step is for someone to become a head coach. But I think the NBA is, their thought processes are a little ahead of us, and someone will break that down in the college game. So it takes a pop to have the fortitude to notice what a female is doing, and that there's not any difference in basketball, and recognizing someone's talent like he did Becky's. And
Yeah.
I think that will That will happen.
Yeah, I had the pleasure when I was coaching and running the Knicks that Becky was playing for the Liberty. And so we became dear friends. And she would always come over to Isaiah Thomas and myself, and we would talk basketball for hours. And she was brilliant. And, you know, and I think that's what she did with Pop, you know. And then she's just, but, you know, going back to the men's side of having a woman's coach, who has raised a lot of the male college players? Grandma or mom? Right? No father sometimes. You're a lot of single parent homes.
You're probably right.
Right?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, there's a lot of...
And trust me, there's a lot of resentment to a male yelling at another male at that age. And I, you know, and now all of a sudden, if you had someone on your staff that really knows how to talk to them, I guarantee you would be listening. So you and I solved a huge problem today. I love that. If you were to, what would you like to see happen in a women's game in the next few years, looking down the road? If you were the head of women's basketball at the college level, what is there any rule changes that you would like or anything like that?
I think there's been some really positive things done in the last few years. I think that the recognition of too much summer basketball may have been good for a multitude of reasons. I mean, the athletes are playing too many games, overtraining a bit. And then I think that, you know, maybe even a little bit of burnout. But I think that the balance of saying, okay, we're not going to take it completely away from them has been good. It remains to be seen. We've got a little bit of a different calendar this year where we've got a couple of events spread out in April and May, and I'll be interested to see if that's a positive. I think the so-called dead period, we had a week in May where there's no contact with anyone. I think some of those things are good for not only the college coaches to say, okay, you know, I don't know that just picking one week is the right answer, you know, because we all don't have the same calendar. So I think that was a start, but I think not only is it helpful for the college coaches, but I think it's helpful for the student athletes just to get a break, you know, from all of us. Yeah. Because I don't think sometimes we understand how they're being bombarded on a daily basis. We just think about what's happening for us, you know? And so I think that there's been some real positive moves made towards managing the recruiting calendar.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that, I mean, they're opening up all kinds of opportunities to go overseas. I don't know if that's going to be good or bad that we can go anytime. You know, it seems like now we can kind of be out a lot and go overseas a little bit more. So I think all of that remains to be seen, but I do think that they're trying to make some positive steps in that direction. I think the thing that I'll be interested in as we move along is what do we do about the attendance at the regionals? And I'm not one to completely speak on that, but I think that is being looked at. I think the Final Fours have been absolutely tremendous.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. I was at last year's in Columbus.
Dallas was fantastic. Last year was fantastic. And I think that the concerted effort to market the Final Four, I think moving it to Friday, Sunday was a huge move. I think it enabled more fans and more college coaches to stick around instead of, you know, having to kind of drag it out a little bit longer. I think that was a tremendous move. I think it was great for our sport, but I think we're still at that point where what do we do with the regionals to get more attendance? So those are things that I'm sure are being looked at. I don't necessarily have an opinion. I don't have an answer, but I think it is something that we have to look at.
What's the thing that when you're recruiting players, I know talent is the price of admission, the starting point, but when you're looking, you and your staff are looking at players or other coaches, and what are the things that you're really looking for in a player, both from a skill standpoint and then from a personal standpoint?
I think for me, that I think you can't get away from is, you know, what is their relationship with winning? You know, have they won in their lifetime? Was it important to them? Because I think one thing that becomes a common denominator with teams that I've been on that have won championships is that when you look at those individuals, they won something when they were young. You know, they understand that the price you pay to win a championship. And I think if you can gather more individuals that know how to do that, it becomes an easier job in college to not have to teach that part, because there is a price you pay. There's an edge you have. There's a go beyond what other people want to do to get to that championship level. And so I think if you have they have an understanding of that, it's helpful. For me personally, I like players that have motors. You know, I like players that play hard and, for lack of better words, have some wheels on them and a competitive spirit about them. I think the more players you have that are in my program, for sure, that can get up and down and value defense and have some motor about them, it's an easier process for them in practice for me. And then I think the last piece, and this only really has to relate to me being at the University of Texas, is that as an individual, they have to care about academics. It has to be a factor for them, or it's very hard here. It's a process that becomes a little overwhelming for them at the University of Texas if they don't really value the education, and it's not a factor into why they chose Texas. So I think that when you start to put all those pieces together, then that becomes the student athlete that I'm looking for at Texas.
That is phenomenal. No, I love that, Karen. And, you know, all I can say is that Chris Del Conte and the University of Texas, but most importantly, your players are very lucky that you're their head coach. This has been phenomenal for me and for all the people that get to listen to Coaching You each week. I think this is fantastic, and I really appreciate you doing that for us.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and let's talk more about getting more women involved.
Well, you know, I love the women's game, and I think I want them to be such a big part of investing in their own careers to learn and stuff and be part of it, because it's so, so important to the players that they're coaching, and you're a great example of it. But Karen, thank you so much again.
Thank you. You have a good day. Hook 'em horns.
Karen, thanks so much. I thought, you know, when we were going to do this, I had several friends, including Shaka Smart, the head coach at University of Texas, rave about Karen. And wow, you can see why young women want to go to that incredible university, how she attracts them, how personable she is, what a tremendous coach she is. Again, I can't emphasize enough the importance of, I watched WNBA basketball in August, September, and the things I learned, the way they run and execute plays is amazing. But watching on a night off for you guys that are out there coaching men's basketball, watching a college basketball game, you will love the way some of these teams are playing. And I think, you know, you can always learn it. Ideal thing is continuous learning as a coach in many aspects. I think what Karen did is gave you some tips of how to build and manage a program, how to recruit, the things that are really important. She is a 5-star coach, and really appreciate Karen Ashton for doing this. So until next week, this is the coach, Brendan Serra.